Good morning. The Sandy 12 Budget Division will come to order. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2015. It's 8:31 a.m. We're in room 112 at the State Capitol. We have several bills before us this morning. First will be Senate File 1370, Senator Westrum, and we invite your testifiers to join you at the table. Good morning, Senator Westrum.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
We do have a fiscal note, members, that's at your side there. And we shall proceed with Senate File 1370.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1370, is it?
Yes.
I'll turn it over to my testifiers real quick, but Browns Valley is a school district in my Senate district, and it is on the furthest edge of Minnesota on the west hump, and there's a unique situation that they've had a reciprocity agreement for years where South Dakota pays for some of the students throughout the K-12 system, and Minnesota pays for other students, the younger students generally is the Minnesota side, and the high school is the South Dakota side, because literally the town and the citizens and the students mostly come from Minnesota, but Browns Valley address actually goes into South Dakota some, which is a unique phenomenon. And so I'll turn it over to my testifiers. Which one of
Brenda.
You? Brenda.
Brenda
wants to start. Identify yourself for the record.
Brenda Reed, Superintendent of Browns Valley Schools. Good morning, everyone.
And good morning. Thank you, Superintendent.
Okay, Browns Valley School was established in 1881, beginning the unique relationship with the families of West Browns Valley, Minnesota, which is in South Dakota. Now, today, these families living in South Dakota have South Dakota driver's license with Minnesota physical addresses. Until 1994, the Browns Valley School has been governed by two school boards, Browns Valley School Board District 801 and South Dakota District 54-1. The South Dakota District was physically responsible for educational expenditures, including the maintenance and the construction of a new elementary and high school. Later, the South Dakota District dissolved due to financial difficulties. From 1994 to 2009, Browns Valley School and Sisseton South Dakota School District established a tuition agreement. And with this tuition agreement, four-year-olds were included and received Minnesota Special Education Services. Then from 2009, the South Dakota-Minnesota Reciprocity Agreement was established, and that served kindergarten through grade 12. Preschool was not included and could no longer receive special education services from the state of Minnesota. Currently, 49% of our students do come from South Dakota. The preschool program is our feeder program with West Browns Valley addresses. They need to receive the same services as our Minnesota students. So please support the Senate File 1370. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. Morning. My name is Denise Pekarski. I'm the principal at the Browns Valley School, and I am just going to touch briefly on the academic performance of our students. The Browns Valley School has been named a reward school by the Minnesota Department of Education for the past 2 years. This means that we ranked among the top 15% of the highest performing schools in the state. This shouldn't be possible given our student demographics. We currently have 72% of our students receiving free and reduced lunches, while 59% of our students are Native American. But because of the strong start that our pre-kindergarten program gives our students, we're able to produce high-quality students for the state of Minnesota, students who would otherwise be a cost to the state of Minnesota later on in life. So basically what we're asking you for is the same amazing start for our West Browns Valley families that live on the north side of Lake Traverse, families that live in South Dakota but have a Minnesota physical address. families who are part of the community of Browns Valley, families who have parents and grandparents who have attended our school and continue to choose to send their children to the school in Browns Valley. So we're asking you to please support Senate File 1370. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Barb Goodhart, and I've been the pre-kindergarten teacher for the Browns Valley School District since 1998. For the past 17 years, I have observed four-year-olds enter into our district with developmental delays, low in language and communication, and even nonverbal. All Browns Valley pre-kindergarten students with IEPs were serviced by Minnesota until the reciprocity agreement in 2009. We are no longer able to provide these services until our students enter kindergarten. The first 5 years of a child's life are the most important in development, and yet we're asking our children with delayed development to wait yet another year, letting them fall further behind. I'm the first person to team up with our families and students in our district, first through registration and then through a summer visit. My goal of the summer visit is to begin to build that relationship with our families and our children. It's important that their first experience with our school be a positive one. As I interact with the child, I began to observe developmental and speech-language concerns. The whole time thinking to myself, the only choice that I have to offer this West Browns Valley family and child is to wait another year until their child enters kindergarten to get them to get their needs met. Browns Valley is their community, the community where they buy their groceries, their gas, the school that's a mile and a half from their home. At this time, I feel like I failed the family and their child. There's nothing worse than seeing a child who needs additional services and we are not able to give them what they need. Our families are not understanding why they have to wait another year for their child to receive the help that they need. It doesn't seem educationally ethical to me. Our pre-kindergarten program was started through a federal first grade preparedness grant in which we were a pilot program for 3 years. We also had a Head Start program in our community. Eventually, that Head Start program collaborated with the school district. We no longer have the support of either of these programs. We have lost our funding, our staff, and our additional resources for our families. We are one of the poorest counties in Minnesota, and our Head Start program was cut from our county. We stand alone as a district. A major change took place 10 years ago in our district when a colleague and I decided to learn sign language. We began to implement sign language into our daily schedule. We now do sign language throughout our daily routine. We see sign language as a best practice in our district. Sign language not only provides our students with success in communication, but as well as being able to participate. We now use sign language for our transitions, our classroom management, as well as our curriculum. When our students enter our district in the fall, our data demonstrates that we are 15 to 20% below the state average. In the spring, our data demonstrates that we are above the state average. Our data for our Native American students demonstrates that 0% are on target for kindergarten in the fall. And in the spring, our data shows that we are 60 to 100% on target for kindergarten. So what we're doing in our district is working. When our first class of pre-kindergarten students entered into third grade, I remember as if it were yesterday. The third grade teacher came into my room to celebrate the fact that all of her students were reading. For the first time, she did not have a non-reader in her classroom. That still stands true today. I can name the nonverbal children that have entered into our district, and I follow them as they move through the grades. As I observe their data, I see that some of them are at grade level, some of them are slightly below grade level, and some of them are significantly below grade level. And I have to wonder, where could have they been if their needs would have been met? A couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to observe Josephine, a past student of mine. She was in the hallway having a conversation with our custodian, and she was smiling. As I walked by, I noticed she was enjoying the interaction. The cool part to this story is that 3 years ago when Josephine entered pre-kindergarten, she was nonverbal, so nonverbal that she was unable to state her name. Yes, sir. That's when the first modification took place, and she is still known by much of our staff and students today as JoJo. Our families are choosing our district as their school family. Our school is in their community, and yet we cannot meet their needs. We are not only setting the foundation for their education, but for their life. Let's not fail them. Let's not turn our families away. In closing, we have a one-minute video demonstrating some of what you have heard here today. The student in the front entered our program as a nonverbal child this fall. This last clip is a morning meeting message written by the pre-kindergartners on our smart board. It starts out with the greet and pet to Washtay, which is Dakota for good day. Today is Wednesday. Ellie is the star of the day. And it ended with asking the commissioner to please come and visit our school. And it was signed by the Little T-Birds. I'm asking you to please support the Senate File 1370. Thank you for your time.
Thank you to each of the testifiers and for making the journey here this morning. Senator Westrum, any additional testimony before we open it up for questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, no, I think that covers it all. One concluding comment. I understand the commissioner is scheduled to be coming out to Browns Valley to tour the school and meet with them. Do you have a date set?
No.
Not yet, but there's been an interaction to do that. So just bring that to your attention. So, okay. But happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair. I know this is a unique situation. The fiscal note is not a big number, but it's a unique situation that I know we deal with from time to time.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Is there corresponding legislation in South Dakota that's being considered now? Because one of the conditions, I believe, is that South Dakota would pass a law.
The only law that exists is the reciprocity agreement between K through 12. And prior to that, we had that tuition agreement between the two districts, which included the four-year-olds, and consequently, because the reciprocity agreement was passed, it didn't include four-year-olds, and that was at the time of Commissioner Seagram. And for some reason, they didn't include the four-year-olds, and I still don't know.
Okay, well, it certainly underscores the importance of pre-K. And I believe that Mr. Wilms has comment, fiscal analyst, regarding the action that may be necessary in South Dakota as it relates to reciprocity.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my comments relate to the fiscal note. As you'll see on page 4 of the fiscal note, there's a line item for early learning scholarships. Under this proposal, the fiscal note assumes that new students would be eligible for scholarships, but that actually wouldn't increase the appropriation. So the fiscal note is actually $30,000 too high in each year. So in fiscal year 16, it would be approximately $13,000 with a small amount of savings in the out years. just wanted to state that for the committee.
Thank you for that clarification. That's noted. Please, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Westrom, and to your testifiers. I note that this is specific to special education services. And from reading this and from reading the fiscal note, is this in particular for special education? So, I mean, the video you showed was of a nonverbal student. So could you maybe clarify that?
Superintendent?
Right now, it's for the special education students. What happens is the parents are, of course, given a choice to go through the referral process with South Dakota. However, to receive the special education services, they would have to travel to a large district, Sisson, South Dakota, which is only 15 miles away to receive their services, whether it's 1 or 2 hours of the day, and then get transported back to Minnesota. And the parents are choosing not to do that. Because they would like their children to stay in our school. And so what happens, by law, we cannot serve them with Minnesota. They have to wait until their kindergarten, and then they are assessed. So the parents are choosing not to have them assessed by Minnesota or by South Dakota at the age of four, because when they enter into kindergarten, then they also have to be reassessed to meet Minnesota standards. And they are choosing not to do that. So main reason is they don't want to go to, and I think you can comment more on that, Mrs. Goodhart.
Right. You know, I've gone great lengths with families, you know, that really want the help for their child, and they want to pursue it. And so we go to a neighboring district where to attend a meeting is a big deal. They're going in unknown. They don't know anybody. They're not comfortable. We're building that relationship in Browns Valley. I've gone to the point of offering to pick up families to go there. I've gone to meetings and families don't show up. They don't want that. They want to do it in our school. And most of our families just don't understand why we won't help them. They're not understanding it.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure just which testifier would like to answer this, but is this unique just to Browns Valley District, or is this also an issue with other districts that are real close to the South Dakota border?
Because of the Native Americans.
As far as I know, it's unique to Browns Valley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, is there anyone from the Department of Ed that can talk about revisions to the reciprocity agreement? Are we in negotiations to fix the issue that the superintendents raised?
Department representative is approaching.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Government Relations Director with the Minnesota Department of Education. Senator Pratt, as I understand it from the fiscal note and from conversations with staff, as Senator Wieger has mentioned, we are looking at South Dakota law needing to be changed as well as Minnesota law. I can go back and talk to staff who are involved with the reciprocity agreement and see what exact provisions would need to be changed. I personally am unaware of what's going on that end, but I can certainly get back to the committee with that information as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to testify on Senate File 1370? Okay. Another question from Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the things that I feel is more important about this is because these are special ed students, and in special ed students, the earlier you can reach them, it makes a difference. It sounds like in subsequent years they will be in a Minnesota school district, and so the difference here is that These are students who are already going to be in a Minnesota school district, and it will help us greatly in our education system if these students can be helped even that 1 year. That's a big year for special ed students. So I just in reading through this and connecting that, I thought that was important to help make sure is clear on the record. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm good. Since we have the, the staff here from the school district, again, we appreciate your coming to the Capitol. You know, we're talking a great deal about Ready for K, readiness dollars, other investments on the Ready for K goal. Any comments in general in terms of where the state is headed in that direction as to whether you sense additional need for investment in that area, in addition to the special education, early education that we're talking about?
As far as the scholarships, truly benefit from those, we received the $25,000. However, this year, because most of our students in preschool were from South Dakota, we didn't receive the full benefit. At the beginning of the year, it was $10,000. What would benefit us, we for years ran an all-day, everyday kindergarten, and then the financing started what this year for full payment. What I would like to see is at least half state aid coming off the formula for preschool, if not full, all day, every day, because we offer all day, every day. The kids start breakfasts at 7:40, and they leave school at 3:25, and some to go to the after-school program till 5 o'clock. So, yes, financial support is needed, and I think our test data shows what our school is doing, starting with the little ones at 4 years old.
Okay. Thank you. And Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to Senator Dames, in reading the fiscal note, that indicates there are 10 school districts that border South Dakota that have that reciprocity agreement, but apparently only one is involved in the discussion we're having here. So,
correct. I believe we're looking at two students.
Yeah, but potentially there could be more.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I assume there hasn't been any discussion about annexation of any of the South Dakota to Minnesota.
I think the border should be moved.
North Dakota.
Which way?
I wonder how long that process would take. But,
Mr. Chair, if there's oil found, we'll pursue
it. Okay. Senator Johnson.
Just one question for my own clarification. This issue really comes up because the people have a Minnesota address, but they're actually in South Dakota. Is that common with other districts that are on the border?
Well, Superintendent,
I'm not sure, but I know Mrs. Goodhart has a South Dakota driver's license with a physical address of Minnesota.
Living 2 miles. I live 2 miles out of Browns Valley. I have a South Dakota driver's license with a Browns Valley, Minnesota address on that South Dakota license.
Police Senator Stump may have an anecdote on that.
yes, a number of years ago, one of my opponents that ran in the Senate race actually had a North Dakota address and happened to put that on. It happened to go on his literature before he realized that that wasn't very good. So it happens quite a bit. And the history of I think it demonstrates the delicacy of the delicate nature of reciprocity agreements, because we have borders on all sides. You know, on our east side of the state, we've gone back and forth over the issue of taxes, who pays taxes, because we have a lot of people from Wisconsin work in Minnesota. On our side, on the North Dakota and the South Dakota side, there were like a town of Oslo, which is in my district. About 2/3 of the students in Oslo a number of years ago were from North Dakota. And then eventually North Dakota decided that they were spending a lot of money, was going to Oslo School District in Minnesota. So they kind of pulled back on the reciprocity agreement. So it kind of ebbs and flows. And I think the one thing that I noticed over the years was that we really need to establish discussions with our colleagues on the other side of the boundary or border. And I think that kind of helps facilitate many of these issues where students and their families would rather go to the town or the school district on the opposite side because it's closer, and that's their home. Many farmers in my area of the state have family on both sides of the boundary, and a lot of them have established a certain area where they call home, and that's where they want to go to school, just as you mentioned. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senators, just to respond, I have 72 miles of border with South Dakota in my district. And so in response to Senator Johnson's question, yes, this is very common. Actually, my wife grew up in the northwest part of Rock County. She grew up 6 miles from the South Dakota border into Minnesota, was a student in the Laverne School District, but had a Sherman, South Dakota address all those years. And trust me, it creates a lot of issues as you go through the process. And even her sister, when she went to Marshall, in-state versus out-of-state, they couldn't believe that she was a resident because her address said she was from South Dakota. I've had a bill for 3 years here as far as a problem reciprocity agreement, and so we have not only this issue but a variety of issues that arise and that's a constant back and forth as you work your way up the borders around every part of the state.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Westrum, and to the testifiers, congratulations on the progress being made in your district, the recognition. Appreciate the commissioner is making plans to be out there, too, in response to the invitation. We will make note of the revised fiscal note estimate as well. That said, Senate File 1370 is moved by Senator Weber to be for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Further discussion? If not, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Okay. Next, we have Senate File 1044, Senator Wicklund. And Senator Wicklund may be in another hearing, and so we're going to go next to Senator Jensen, Senate File 920, and we invite Mr. Harper, Superintendent Harper, to join her for testifying.
It's just wrong. Yes, it's
wrong. Senate File 920. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 920. Is asking for some additional funding for our state academies. If you look on line 1.1, it's laid out very well. $708,000 in 2016, $490,000 in fiscal year 2017 for the technology enhancements that may be used for the computer hardware, computer software, connectivity, communications, assistive technology, access to electronic books and other online materials, licenses, subscriptions, and technology staff and training costs. When this first came up, we heard about it in a hearing we had earlier this year. And what I did is I went and talked to some of the students that attend the academies, and I asked them directly, what is it that this would do for you as a student? And the thing that came up over and over is something that I had not really thought about. A lot of the students live at the academies. Yeah. And so they do their homework at the academies. And they expressed a real desire to have increased connectivity just to do their homework. So this is more than just what they can do in the classroom. It also involves what these students have access to as students when they try to do their work outside of the classroom, too. So I do have with me Superintendent Brad Harper, and he's going to talk about it a little bit more.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent.
Good morning, Senator Wieger and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Brad Harper. I'm the superintendent of the State Academies in Faribault. I'm about 2.5 or 2.75 years into the position, and I've learned a lot during that period of time. I have two people with me that I want to try to reserve some time for them to testify. One is Hannah Harriman, the other one is Sophie Brown. They're two students. They're two students from MSAB, Minnesota State Academy for the Blind. Senate File 920 is not only designed to help students at the State Academy for the Blind. It's designed to help students on both academies, the State Academy for the Deaf and the State Academy for the Blind. For those of you that don't know about our location, we have two schools that are about a half a mile apart. And so there's a lot of shared activity between the two facilities. Before I get into my comments, I want to thank several people here at the table. I have to thank Senator Jensen for her unwavering support for the academies. I also have to thank Senator Stumpf for his detailed review of our plans earlier in the legislative session, and also to Senator Chamberlain, who, during my first year here, had some very wise words for me. Ask what you want, make sure you don't inflate what you're asking for, and make sure you can justify what you're asking for. And those words have been very, very helpful as I've moved forward during these 2.75 years. The state academies have been around for 150 years. Doing bad math even that I can do, that puts it back around the Civil War, the United States Civil War. So we've been around for a long, long time and have done a lot of good work providing support for students across the state. We're here seeking support for Senate File 920, which Senator Jensen has put before you. This will help upgrade our technology. And it's not simply for staff. That's an important thing to realize because we have a lot of staff on campus, but the main reason for this request and for this initiative is to improve the technology for students. They do not have access to the same quality of technology that they have in many of their home districts. That's something that we are taking strong steps to correct, and this bill will help do that. Our operational allocation over the years has not allowed us to keep pace with the strides in educational technology and the advancements in educational technology. We cannot prepare students for an independent future post-graduation when they have access to antiquated equipment. Preparing students to become part of the world's best workforce becomes problematic if our operating system is Vista, which is what it is. Currently, we have Vista as our operating system. Our network cannot support System 7 without bogging down even more. Computers will not support or accept Windows 8, 8.1, or the soon-to-be-released Windows 10. So there's a lot of problems that we have improving our system. We also have one computer with XP on it because the upgraded software program that we need for converting some of our text won't function in Vista. So we have multiple problems that we're trying to address. Our plan was developed by the staff. It's a multi-year plan that gives the academies a sustainable plan. Senate File 920 is for only the first 2 years of that plan that goes on into the second biennium. 920 does not talk about that, and that is because both representatives from the Senate and the House want to keep things within the biennium that they're working in. The governor's proposal or revised supplemental budget does go into the second biennium, but the second biennium is not part of this request. If you wish a copy of that plan, we will certainly get it to you. The plan has major components: infrastructure improvement, meaning bandwidth and Wi-Fi capability, servers, computers, mobile devices, software, assistive technology, which is critically important for the students at MSAB, Student State Academy for the Blind. We also have staff and training built into the plan. Senate File 920 has approximately $708,000 set aside or dedicated for 2016, $490,000 for 2017, which gives us a grand total of about $1,198,000. Governor Dayton's revised supplemental budget also goes into the second biennium, as I said, but that's not what we're talking about for this bill. Support for the plan. We have support from the governor's office. We have a parallel bill in the House. You have the Senate version, and I also have to talk about support from Minute. I made some rather unflattering comments in my first round of testimony here. Minute has reached out to us. Commissioner Baden has met. I've met personally with him, and we have his assurance that we will work collaboratively together. John Eichten from Minute has been in touch with me several times to help us understand what happened during that whole process and to, quote, take a line from Cool Hand Luke, what we have here is a failure to communicate. And that's basically what happened.
We have that, too.
With that, I'd like to turn it over to Sophie. Sophie, are you?
Thank you, Superintendent. And we would like to get a copy of that plan, too, if you
that will be.
That.
We'll get that to you.
Great. And welcome to the students.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sophie Brown. I am a high school residential student at the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind. When I walk down the halls and when I talk to my friends, I see that so many people here are ready to learn. They want to learn. And we're here to prepare for post-graduation when we go into the workforce. And technology, I think, is a big part of that. I strongly feel that we need the technology. And the reason is we use technology to read, to write, to communicate. Electronic books that we download are not only for our leisure, but a big part of it is for school, especially our English classes or in our science or history classes. We need to get the textbooks and we have to download those so that we can read along in our classes. Also, the assistive technology such as the Braille note takers is an essential part of our education, I feel, because it's what helps us read and write efficiently, and it's what helps us get our assignments done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Hannah, would you like to make some comments?
Okay. Good morning. My name is Hannah Harriman. I, like Sophie, I do go to the School for the Blind. However, I am in the transition program, which is post-graduation and working on, like, going from high school into college into independent living. And I take a college class along with two other people. And the thing that I think, going off of what Sophie said, is this technology isn't just for now. It's not just for going into the college. It's about the workforce. And as we all know, this where we are economically right now is a global age. We're competing with sighted peers with, you know, we need to be just as competitive, just as competent, just as ready to go out into the real world of you know, the competitive workplace. And in order to do that, we need the technology that will help people to see that, you know, we're not just blind people who need these services, but we can be just as capable, just as competent, just as hardworking as any other sighted person, because we need to, we live in a sighted world, we need to be able to adapt to that. And technology is one of those things that, you know, people can look at us and say, okay, we're doing what any other person's doing. The disability doesn't set us apart, make us different. It brings us closer together to the sighted community and sighted workforce.
Thank you, Ms. Herrmann. And Ms. Herrmann and Ms. Brown, could you share with us what your plans are when you're done with school? Well, of course, we have lifelong learning, but what the plans are after you graduate? And
Well, when I graduate, my plans are to, I'm planning to head to university or college and get a job in the workforce once I pick a major, and I plan to aim for success and join the workforce, help out.
Great. Ms. Herrmann?
I'm still deciding what... Okay. I'm still deciding what I'm going to do. I know that I will be doing at least a four-year college, if not more. And like Sophie said, going out into the workforce, I don't know.
Thank you for sharing. Hey, Senator Jensen. Well, that question isn't for you, but
oh. No. I'm still deciding what
And we'll open it up if anyone else in the audience would like to testify. Otherwise, we'll entertain a motion and appreciate the update and documenting the need, as Senator Chamberlain gave you good advice, Superintendent Harper.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I hope you can see and get an understanding of how important this technology is for these students. And hope that we can figure out a way to get that into the hands of them as quick, you know, hopefully as soon as we can.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 920? If not, Senator Jensen, a motion to lay over for possible inclusion?
Mr. Chair, you do have someone who would like to testify.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Alicia Howard. I am a residential student at the Academy for the Blind. And along with Hannah, I, along with another student, go to a college class. And technology for us is a big part of our daily lives. We definitely use it for reading, writing, getting our thoughts, you know, communicating with each other, getting our thoughts around. And it's really nice to know that we have so many people here who care and who are willing to fight for us to have adequate and proper technology that we need on in our daily lives. And I just want to say that along with the college and high school students, I know that our younger students in middle school and the elementary school programs, they definitely would benefit from being able to have the, you know, the proper technology that they would need to be able to learn and be able to get acclimated with the assistive programs that are out there and be able to prepare and be able to gain more independent skills when it comes to technology. So thank you to everyone here who is advocating for all of us students at the Academy for the Blind and the Academy for the Deaf to have proper assistive technology. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And as we ask the other students, would you like to share, Ms. Howard, what you plan on doing following college?
I will definitely be, after leaving the Academy, going to a state university. I want to pursue a career in teaching and in definitely in either special education or being an advocate for students like me going through these types of programs.
Thank you for sharing. Okay, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and the committee. My name is Ian Moon. I'm a high school student at the Academy for the Blind. I actually take a lot of classes at the Faribault High School. We can mainstream into the school district that's currently down in Faribault. So I take 5 out of my 6 classes down at the high school. But a big part of that and the big reason why I'm able to succeed at the high school is because of technology and what I have our family has personally been able to get for me. So what I kind of realized and think that the technology, it's not just there for us to just have. We need it, and it's a very important thing throughout our school day, whether it's, you know, we can do our assignments or we can follow along in a PowerPoint that our teachers are presenting. You know, we can do our math homework with special accommodations. It's not just about the technology. It's more about the fact of our education. It helps, and it will bring our education along. Without technology, students can get behind because we have to find alternative means to be able to do our homework, whether that's on an old Perkins Brailler, which is then you have to send it to someone so they can transcribe it, and by the time you get that back and turned in, it's days late. So this technology, we're able to, if we have the right technology, we have, it's adequate, we're able to get our homework done, get the things that we need to get done for our classes and get the grades that we need to get to be able to get into a good college and get a good future education.
And Mr. Moon, that's your intent then after the academy to go to college and enter the workforce?
Yes, I am planning on either trying to get a degree in psychology or law from a bigger university.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing. Is there anyone else that'd like to testify? Yes, I see a hand up, and we'll... as you're approaching, Senator Bonoff has a question.
A comment, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to remind members that earlier in the session we heard from the preschool parents who wanted us to make that law change that seemed like it needed a little work. So I'm hopeful that we will accommodate the preschool families as well as we consider this legislation too.
Thank you. And welcome.
Hi. My name is Deja Johnson. I am also a residential student at the academy, and I'd just like to say that we've gone over how much we really need the technology. Another thing is we use Braille, and that's great because Braille reading is cool. If you don't have or if you prefer to read without a digital device, but people talked about going into college. When you go into college, there's a very small chance that you're going to be using Braille in college because it's so expensive. I don't know the exact cost, but I know that it is really expensive. I mean, you need the paper and the people to Braille. So that's another big thing, and you know, so it's like, I don't remember, one of our students said it doesn't just stop, you know, after high school, it goes into college. It definitely goes into college. So,
well, thank you for sharing that, and yep. As we ask the other testifiers following the academy, what are your plans?
After I graduate, I plan to go to college, and I'm hoping that I can do something with early childhood development, so just teaching young children and things.
Okay, well,
congratulations to you and to each of the testifiers for sharing. Okay, is there anyone else that'd like to testify on Senate File 920? Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Jensen, or Superintendent, seems like a lot of money. And my question, and Senator Jensen and I just went through a process where we had a two-year allocation, and we got to the end of the 2 years, and it looked like the money was going to dry up. Do you already have plans in place, curriculum, specific technology you're ready to invest in so that you can hit the ground running? Or do you still – my fear is that we'll get to the end of fiscal 17 – and maybe there's still additional needs, and do we need to have some accommodating language to allow for carryover into the next biennium?
Actually, Mr. Chair,
Senator Jensen.
There was an amendment that was drafted, too, that I think staff maybe can explain that maybe I need to put onto this bill. Okay.
Mr. Wilms?
Mr. Chair and committee members, if you look at the way the bill is drafted, the fiscal year 17 costs would be ongoing, so the amount that's set aside for technology would continue into the tails. So that would effectively become part of the base unless language is introduced to change the base to reset it based on the proposal being requested. There is an amendment that we have that we can introduce to that effect.
Senator Jensen, is that your intent?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what Senator Pratt is referring to then would do the opposite of what this would do.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
So that, to be clear, that's not your amendment that
right.
we have here.
Thank you. I think I was mistaken in that I thought that the $24 million, $25 million was going towards technology, and no. Now that I look at it, it's I guess I didn't catch that it was an increase to the base.
Okay. That's noted. Senator Jensen, would you like to make a motion for
sure.
possible inclusion?
Sure, we can do the A1 amendment.
Pardon me?
I will offer the A1 amendment.
Okay. It's being distributed, and it's an author's amendment.
And explain.
I love that. That's pretty funny. Actually.
As it's being distributed, we're going to ask Mr. Wilms to highlight it from fiscal staff. Mr. Wilms?
You guys.
Mr. Chair and committee members, basically, the amendment before you conforms with the governor's proposal in terms of the technology sort of phasing to a lower level in the out years in fiscal year 18 and 19. The technology costs would be ongoing, but it would be at a lower amount.
Okay. This is an author's amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. We now have Senate File 920 as amended. Further discussion? We'll entertain a motion for possible inclusion, Senator Jensen.
Yes.
On that motion?
I move Senate File 920 as amended.
For possible inclusion? In the omnibus
possible
bill.
Inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Jensen, Superintendent Harper, and testifiers. We're going to go next to Senator Wicklund, and Senator Jensen, maybe you could accompany your testifiers outside, and we'll have Senator Wicklund be joined by her three testifiers, Senate File 1044. And then we'll go to Senate File 1883. And okay, please proceed, Senator Wicklund, Senate File 1044.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm here to present Senate File 1044. It's an English learner state aid qualification modification. This bill would provide additional support for English language learners by extending the funding for up to 7 years. Last year, the legislature extended the number of years of funding from 5 to 6 years, and this would bring it to up to 7 years of funding. Some of the benefits of, believe, of increasing it to 7 years would be increased student achievement and success for those becoming proficient in a second language. Some students do not need the full 7 years or full 6 years to become proficient, but there are many who do need full or longer than the current 6 year allocation, and many come with very little exposure to school and no exposure to the English language. So it's important to give them enough time to learn the language with programming that's tailored to their specific needs. Another, I think, positive to doing so would be reduce the need for school districts to cross-subsidize their English learner programming from funds that are needed to serve students in other programs. I have testifiers here today from several districts, and I'm not sure which order you would like to go in, but if they...
Hey, thank you, Senator Wicklund, and please proceed in the order you wish.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Beth Stinglein, and I'm the EL supervisor for Bloomington Public Schools. And I'm here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 1044, which would increase funding for English learners from 6 to 7 years. In addition to being the EL supervisor for my district, I also am fortunate enough to teach a newcomer class at Valley View Middle School. My newcomer class has a lot of newcomers. Many of the students have just arrived to the country. They don't speak English, but they've received a good education in their home country. But in that same newcomer class, I have students who are newly arrived to the country, but have either not gone to school or their education has been interrupted. An example of this is for the past 2 years, I've taught a student from Somalia. Nemo is very bright. She's very curious. She's in seventh grade, so she's very talkative. But last year she couldn't read because she never attended school. Nemo repeated my newcomer class this year, along with an intensive reading intervention class that starts at the beginning with letters and sounds. Nemo has made tremendous progress the past 2 years. She no longer needs my newcomer class, and I have no doubt that she will graduate and continue with her studies after high school. But she will need more time to acquire language than other English learners. So we know that on average it takes 4 to 7 years for students to acquire the academic language that they need to perform at grade level. We also know that interrupted formal schooling students need 7 to 10 years to acquire the language needed to perform at grade level. In the past few years in Bloomington, we have had an increased number of interrupted formal students enrolling in our district, along with students who are new to country, along with students who, for various reasons, have had to move between districts, between states, and between the United States and their home country. And in addition to that, we have our ELs who we identify in kindergarten. So the Bloomington School District and our EL program need to be able to meet the needs of all of these English learners in order to make them grade level ready before they exit our program. To be clear, our district makes our exit decisions based on the academic readiness of our students, not on the amount of funding we get from the state. We use the Access Language Assessment, the MCAs, and the MAP test to measure student growth and progress. And many of our ELs are able to exit our program after only 4 years and are successfully performing at grade level. Bloomington has an excellent data system that allows us to look at specific student need in order to provide appropriate services. Nemo is an example of a student who's receiving both EL services and a reading intervention simultaneously so that she can gain proficiency sooner. We've also seen growth for many of our students on the Access test, and we know we're making a difference in how quickly our students are acquiring English. But we also need to make sure that English learners are learning content while they're acquiring language. This requires EL teachers to not just teach language to their students, but to also collaborate and co-teach with content teachers and provide them with staff development on best practice for our English learners. Our job is to make sure that our English learners are successful long after they leave our program. we know that funding alone is not going to lead to improved student performance. Districts and schools first need to make sure that they have good EL programming in place. And I believe that Bloomington and the districts that are represented here today have strong EL programs, and additional funding is only going to enhance our program, and it will allow us to ensure that our state will benefit from an educated, diverse workforce in the future, and that kids like Nemo will get the kind of education they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Sarah George. I'm a teacher of English learners in the Rosemount, Eagan, Apple Valley School District, where I've been teaching for the last 14 years. The proposed funding extension for English learners your committee is considering today from 6 years to 7 years will enable school districts to fund and support English learners for an additional year when that additional year of service is necessary. This funding extension will empower us to deliver better service, especially for older immigrant students. Students who move to the United States well into their adolescence must learn thousands more words than their younger counterparts. Learners coming from refugee camps or other backgrounds with limited or no formal schooling need time to learn both the academic concepts and the academic English language. 14 years ago, when I began teaching, I taught a group of Somali learners who'd arrived in the United States having suffered the brutal trauma of Somalia's civil war. Our new immigrant students were expected to be able to pass mainstream social studies classes and have prior knowledge about American democracy and the comparative study of different government systems within our civics curriculum. They were not only new to the United States, these learners were new to living in a democratic nation state. And they were also expected to be able to fluently discuss the processes related to the democratic function in our society, like how a bill becomes a law or how the Electoral College functions. This background knowledge and the English required to talk about it took their mainstream English-speaking peers 10 years to acquire. Yet our new immigrant students were expected to demonstrate this learning in 2 to 5 years of their arrival into the country. We were able to create a curriculum to meet the needs of our new English learners. However, it was very difficult to find the funding resources necessary to create a program with the level of support needed for our learners who had limited formal schooling. It was difficult to support the frameworks in civics, economics, and U.S. history standards. Extending funding of English learners to 7 years allows teachers to continue supporting middle and high school English learners in discussing both the academic content and the academic English required for that learning. The extension of funding from 6 years to 7 years helps us to empower English learners with academic vocabulary and academic content necessary to be career and college ready.
Thank you.
Chair Weiger, members of the committee, my name is Steve Yanowski. I'm the superintendent for Richfield Public Schools. Richfield is a first-tier suburb with 4,400 students, and prior to coming to Richfield, I was assistant superintendent and principal in St. Paul Public Schools. Richfield Public Schools has in the top 10 of second language students as amongst our learners. In my previous experience in St. Paul, we were in a district with the largest percentage of second language learners. This bill has to do with our ability to support our second language learners. Research shows, and it begins with research, that the average second language learner takes 7 years, not six, not five, to catch up to their English-speaking peers. Research shows that 7 years is what we need in terms of academic support. That also shows, then, that would be a logical area for where we need in terms of funding. The conversation really begins in terms of funding. So with 35% of our students coming from second language backgrounds, that constitutes almost 1,500 children. State funding currently pays for half of a teacher for every 60 students. So if we were to utilize our current state funding, we would be purchasing 11 English as a second language teachers. We've determined that the need, due to the student achievement gap, of which Richfield is outperforming the state. Currently, we have a 20-point achievement gap between our language learners and our English-speaking original homes. The state of Minnesota English language learners, there is approximately a 30-point gap between our second language students and those coming from traditional English-speaking homes. We've doubled the state formula and providing 22 teachers, which allows us to support our students at a ratio of 60 to 1. 60-to-1 provides one teacher for 45 minutes for a small group of 20 English language learners. Obviously not enough to get us to where we want to go, but it's something that we absolutely support with our additional funding. The additional piece to note is that currently in Richfield schools, 136 students are in their sixth year, and 209 students are in their seventh or beyond year. As with our other districts, we believe that achievement is the point. Achievement is the reason for our students to be in school, so we have determined that we're supporting our students regardless of funding and have provided English as a second language support for all 209 students who are in need, who are not at current achievement levels of the state of Minnesota as defined by the MCA tests, and so we support the funding further than our 50% funding. We support students in 7 years and beyond. So we as a district of Richfield Public Schools are in strong support of changing and amending through House file number or Senate file number 1044 to extend, as research would point out, 7 years as opposed to six to fund our English language learners. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to address Senate file 1044? Questions, comments from the committee? Senator Jensen, Wicklund, the need is clear, and obviously there is some cross-subsidy that's going on now to accommodate the need, and it's an issue that we'll have to weigh as we ultimately put our ultimate bill together. We thank the testifiers for their service, for sharing the need for the legislation. And if there's no further comment, we would entertain a motion, Senator Wicklund, to lay Senate File 1044 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I think that you can hear that there's definitely a need, that school districts are working very hard to meet the needs of their learners and to make sure student achievement is top of mind. But I think this bill would help to relieve some pressures that they're feeling. As they devote additional resources to English learners. And so, yes, I would like to move that Senate File 1044 be considered for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yes. On that motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you, Senator Wicklund, and to each of your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Next, Senate File 1883, Senator Jensen, and that'll be followed by Senate File 1042, Senator Bonoff. And we ask that your testifier please join you.
Come on.
I believe that's Penny Howard from Edgewood Middle School.
Mr. Chair. Senate File 1883 establishes three grant programs for career and technical education. We're asking for a $5 million each year in the biennium for purchase of equipment, $2 million each year in the biennium for the hire of CTE instructors, and $1 million each year in the biennium for innovations and development and the delivery of CTE programming. Each one of those, the grants will be administered in criteria developed by the Commissioner of Education to achieve equitable distribution of funds based on need. Grants must be split equally between school districts within seven county metro area and all other school districts. School districts must report to the Commissioner by November 1st the following year what has been purchased or done with the awarded grant money. A report including the method and rationale for how need was determined, which districts received money, and what the grant money was used for is due to the legislature by February 1st, 2017, and then a final report on 2018. Where this comes from is last year, House File 3172 was passed into law. That law asked the Department of Education to conduct an inventory of career and technical education courses along with the inventory of the equipment that they were using. That study was done, and it's available, and we actually heard a report on that in this committee. One thing I want to point out is that the equipment inventory estimated that there's about $7.5 million as a minimum investment that would allow the current CTE programs already in existence to operate effectively. And that was only the need of the districts that participated in the inventory, which was 60%. The true need is most likely much higher. It also did not include equipment that were listed that were not included in a
populated list of typical equipment needed for each program area. So when it comes to equipment, we're about a 59% industry standard. So even the ones that are there, only 59% of what is there meets the industry standards to have an effective program. The report goes on to mention barriers to sustaining and increasing CTE participation. We've been talking about this all year in this committee. And what they reported is that lack of school funding, lack of existing teachers with CTE licensure, lack of teachers pursuing or obtaining CTE license, and then lack of equipment availability and facilities at the school to expand. We need to explore further the opportunities and challenges that we have with our current career and technology education programming in Minnesota. And that's what this bill is in response to, and making efforts to do just that. I do have some people that would like to speak to it a little bit and to answer some questions. I have Penny Howard, principal of Edgewood Middle School.
Thank you, and welcome, Ms. Howard.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of the proposed legislation to renew our technical and career education in our schools. Again, my name is Penny Howard. I'm the principal at Edgewood Middle School in the Moundsview District. Also with me is Ken Ader, technology education teacher at Edgewood Middle School. We are in our third year as a STEAM magnet school and as a member of the Northwest Suburban Integration School District. STEAM education is provided at all of our Moundsview middle schools. And like STEM education, STEAM involves an integrated approach to teaching science, technology, engineering, and math along with the arts. And I did bring some extra literature if somebody would like some more information about our STEAM program at Edgewood. CTE courses are an important aspect of our STEAM program to first ensure a broad balance of instructional offerings for kids in both the core and the allied arts areas. And also, and secondly, to provide opportunities for students to apply those essential elements of STEAM in a hands-on, project-based learning environment. There are three aspects to the proposed bill that's been addressed that I would like to highlight as they relate to enhancements to our CTE program at Edgewood. Schools would benefit, our school would benefit from these changes and additional resources for years to come. In a couple of minutes, Ken will share some specific examples of what we're talking about currently with our program and our vision for the future. The first area is early exposure. As early as middle school in grades 6, 7, and 8 at Edgewood Middle School, we introduce students to a variety of career and technical experiences, such courses as science of technology, engineering and design classes, Project Lead the Way. Currently, the equipment in our tech ed lab is old, it's worn, it's difficult to keep it currently running. And then also, we are lacking the modern equipment that would move our focus to 21st learning types of opportunities for our students to meet the growing demands of the workforce. We need to bring our labs up to current standards and expand the curriculum resources to address the skill gaps with our career and technical education. Second area is continued focus through high school. There needs to be a continuum of CTE experiences and opportunities available to students, not only at the element or at the middle school, but to carry with them through high school. At the middle school level, students get that initial exposure to a variety of CTE, and then through their high school experience, they can choose to continue taking CTE courses in fully equipped classrooms that focus on career and technical training. As students leave high school, we want every student to be equipped with the skills for post-secondary learning and eventual career placement in a field that not only matches their skill set, but also their interests. The third area is the future of highly qualified teachers. There's a growing need to recruit and retain highly qualified educators to teach these innovative CTE classes. It's becoming increasingly difficult to find licensed and skilled staff to teach these classes. Ken Ader, who I introduced earlier, is an example of a highly qualified CTE teacher who happens to be retiring at the end of this school year.
Due to Has the board accepted that?
Well, I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
So due to the limited pool of candidates and the changing expectations for the position, I am anticipating a challenge in finding a highly qualified licensed teacher to take his place. Sustainability of the program is dependent on the availability of and the quality of the staff teaching the program. Resources for recruitment and training of our CTE staff would increase the likelihood of attracting candidates to these positions. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Ader to give some examples about our current reality and our vision at Edgewood.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Kent Ader. Prior to going to education, I was in the trades for 30-some years, working down in Florida. Had my own business for a while. Coming to Edgewood, the first thing I noticed that the machines there are older than I am. We have a wood shop that's outdated, kind of dangerous. We try to keep the kids safe as best we can. But I'm a very lucky instructor that I got a new laser cutter, latest technology laser cutter, just won last year. And my kids in Tech Ed at Edgewood are excited that we have some new technological equipment. And just as an example, brought very complex little parts that the students are able to draw an Autodesk Inventor, send that information to our laser cutter, and the parts are accurately cut. Students can examine these parts and see, will they indeed connect to the other parts that other students are also making? Last year, I could not do that. We would draw an Autodesk Inventor, print it to a regular printer, cut it out with the scissors, and go into our obsolete machines in the wood shop and sand and cut and patch our machines together. Mm-hmm. So I'm very blessed that this year we have one and it's running almost steady. We can't keep up with our laser cutter. I have a dream that maybe next year at Edgewood we would have a milling machine, that maybe we would have one or two 3D printers and another laser cutter, that maybe in our wood shop we would have a CNC router. That we would have a CNC router. We're living in an ever-changing environment in technological applications and machinery and what we're doing, and I sometimes feel that Edgewood students don't get a fair shake. That we have a taste of technology, but then we go back into the old world of the wood shop and try to make parts, except for one, this new laser. So I hope there will be some funding for students up to date. And I, as I was sitting there trying to present another argument why we should do that, I was thinking of safety. Safety in the wood shop, safety around machines are eliminated almost down to zero when we have computer controlled machining in an environment.
Thank you. Mr. Ader, you mentioned you were in Florida and your trade obviously in carpentry or and then the evolution to the classroom. What was that?
Yes, I was in manufacturing. I was also in Florida in carpentry, did all parts of the trade, the electrical, the masonry, all that. I was very blessed individual that 10 years ago, maybe 15, I decided to go into education. And I got my degree in science and tech ed. I can take the real world environment and bring it down and lay it out before my 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So I had that great opportunity of doing that. But we have to replace some of our aging equipment, our aging people.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Good morning, Senator Wieger, committee members. My name is Brian Hoag, and I'm a media arts instructor for graphics at Roseville Area High School. I'm here this morning to speak on behalf of Senate File 1883. I'm going to be a little blunt this morning. I'm not going to read off of a script. I'm going to tell you like it is in the trenches on a daily basis. This is my 30th year teaching in the state of Minnesota in tech ed. I've also been a business owner. I've also worked in industry. And I can tell you straight up, we need additional funding in these areas. Some of my colleagues are selling candy to raise funds so they can keep a piece of equipment going. Class sizes are continually increasing. Safety is becoming more and more of an issue. We don't have, in many of my colleagues' areas, the equipment necessary to prepare our students for a world that's quickly changing before our eyes. I think if you take a look, we are quite honestly going through a technological revolution as we sit here. We hear about students going to college. That's a great and lofty goal. The reality is, at least in Roseville Public Schools, 2 years after graduation, the majority of our graduates are out working. We must address the issue that all students are career and college ready, with the emphasis on career. We've done some very creative things in Roseville to bridge our financial shortfalls. Our program specifically runs a business where we are self-funded. We don't rely on funds from our district because, quite frankly, the program I operate could never be funded in a public school setting. So what does that mean? It means my students have the fortunate ability to receive internships from local businesses. I have one business in particular, CompuType in Roseville, who hires two of our students who graduate each year, provides them a 12-week internship. At the end of that 12 weeks, they're offered a full-time position beginning at $17 an hour, full benefits, and if that person so chooses, that company will pay for their college education. To me, those are the types of scenarios that we need to address here. How can we better fund this? How can we get our students better prepared for the future that is becoming more technologically challenging every day? These students need technical skills. Another issue I'd like to quickly address, you just heard from Ken. Ken's retiring. Moundsview doesn't know where they're going to get his replacement. In Roseville, we're losing a very skilled teacher next year. I'm heading to California in July to a national educator conference for graphic arts teachers to find us a replacement teacher. I would challenge the committee at this point, do you really know how many colleges right now are preparing technology education teachers in this state?
Yeah.
Last year, there were zero.
Right, zero.
Zero. This year, we have one. St. Cloud State has reopened their program. We can't find people. These programs are so important. Our students, we have several students that come to us on a daily basis. We are the reason they come to school. They're not coming to school for their math, their science, their English. They're coming for these classes because those are relevant to them. We make learning relevant. And my fear is we lose that relevancy for these kids. Where are those kids going? The challenge is, as we look at this, and I know you hear day in and day out people coming asking for additional dollars. What I think we have to do is begin looking at things creatively. Do we want to send people with no hope off to prison, or do we want to send people to meaningful careers and be productive members of society? And so I want you to know that there are a whole segment of educators out there who are busting their butt with very little on a daily basis trying to provide their absolute best to their students. I simply ask that you provide us some additional dollars so that we can help prepare these students for the future and to give business the adequately trained people that they need to be successful and to keep those businesses here in the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your service. Senator Jensen, the need is so clearly stated and again underscored here today.
It's true, Mr. Chair.
We take note of that.
And this bill is by no means a solution. It's just a drop in the bucket for what we really need to take a look at as a state on how do we really address the problems that we have been hearing over and over during this session. I'm really impressed with trying to address the innovation part of this bill, where a community comes up with some innovative idea on how do you deliver something in a different way than we normally do or normally have, and give them some funding so they can pursue that and put that into action. So I sincerely believe, like I said, this is a drop in the bucket, but something that we have to try to move forward with.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to address the measure before us? Comments, questions from the committee? Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is just more or less a comment. I think when it comes to the, and I heard lab renovation, I think we have an opportunity this year. Senator Dahl has a bill that would help all districts, basically, to deal with the whole idea of renovation and maintenance of facilities. That is important because I think a lot of at least in my area of the state, a lot of when districts drop the technical programs and the career-type programs, they virtually abandon the facilities. They're gone. And so I think the funding for that type of replacement needs to come from a much more organized program, such as what Senator Dahl's bill addresses. I think the equipment is when you do a facility, generally you can put the equipment in it the first time and have it go as a package. And bonding is the same way. You know, we can bond at a state level with, for the most part, some of that equipment being part of the building itself. But I see this proposal as more of a program that would look at individual items of equipment or some way to kind of fill in on new equipment, things like that. So I just wanted to put a plug in for Senator Dahl's proposal, and I know that many of us sitting around the table, our areas of the state would be greatly helped by it.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer, and also I want to acknowledge Representative Isaacson is here. He's the chief author in the House on this, and we appreciate your showing support here today. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the goal of this bill. I think all of us around the table have concurred. I have two things. One, if there's already a shortage of teachers, we're providing a grant program when we already have a shortage. And I get concerned about moving resources instead of adding them. It seems like what I've heard more is the greatest need is to have more graduates who can apply for any opening rather than that, such as your retirement. So there's money in the budget for that FTE, but you got to have somebody to take the job who's skilled and trained. So I'm a little bit concerned from that point of view. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, is that when I look at the amounts here, and I would say, Senator Jensen, you're right. This is a small amount for a greater need. But I also, in looking at all the bills we've had here, some school districts really need after school. Some need English language learner. It seems like sometimes we would be better putting money on the basic formula so that the school districts are able to say, well, I need this or I need that. It's just a little bit different approach. To do, but Senator Jensen, I recognize what you're trying to do here, and it's important. I think we don't disagree with the need. I think I just have a few questions about the overall how we get there.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Jensen,
and Senator Kiffmeyer, that's why we included some grant money to hire CTE instructors. I guess I just learned today that we're going to California to get teachers, so there's an expense there.
Address that.
I mean, so
I'm doing that on my own nickel.
On your own, well, and we have to take that seriously. But the other part about this equipment is part of the survey that was done included how old our equipment is. So I'm worried also not just about new ones, but the equipment that we're currently using in our current programs we're not able to replace. So what this grant program would do on the equipment side is it would allow us to modernize the equipment, because if we don't have the modern equipment, that manufacturing looks a lot different than it used to. And if we say we're offering a CTE program in carpentry but don't have a laser, it's really not helpful to the student to be able to actually go out in the workforce and do it. So the goal of this is also to make sure we allow some way to get the modernized equipment so what's relevant to what they will be doing if they choose to go into that career. So part of this would be to modernize as well as try to figure out if there's a way to get some of that equipment in there too.
Sarah Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was brought to my attention just a few months ago about the fact that the University of Minnesota stopped their career and tech ed program. And so I did contact them and learned that they just didn't have demand at the university. And so I did speak to Minscu about that and requested that they look at expanding their offerings in that. And so I just want to let the members know that I will continue to follow up on that, and I will continue to request that Minscu respond to this demand. I think they are the appropriate organization to provide this kind of training.
Thank you. Senator Kento, closing comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And very briefly, I had the chance to work with Representative Isaacson on a different but similar bill a couple years ago. What I really appreciate about this is the pilot and the nature of learning about it and expanding that learning. One of the things that we've heard repeatedly with different career and technical related bills is there is some great innovation going on in our districts around the state. The issue about the expense of staying current with equipment is a real challenge for a lot of schools. It's probably too expensive for every school to maintain state-of-the-art stuff. But the more we can have these sorts of things where the learning is being shared more broadly so that everybody can get better and better at this, because we need it too badly in this state. So I just wanted to acknowledge that part. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, Senator Jensen, thank you for bringing this topic, you know, back to this body, which invested in career tech in the past. And then there's some really good, like Senator Kent saying, innovation out there. And I believe career tech is a great saving programs for kiddos that, you know, might not make it into the big school. And I am totally convinced that this is a great conversation we should be having and continue to have. And I'd sure like to help with that conversation. And, you know, it was years ago, this body, you know, started a program in one of my school districts, the STEP program, and it is multiplied, you know, to do some wonderful career tech stuff. So thank you for doing this, and I want to be part of this conversation going forward.
Thank you, Senator Jensen, to your testifiers. Senator Jensen moves that Senate File 1883 be considered for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. We're going to go out of order, go next to Senate File 1635, Senator Rest, Special Ed Charter Schools, and we ask that all of her testifiers, if you fit, please join her at the table. Before us is...
1635.
Yes, and there is a pending fiscal note. We also have an A15 amendment, and we'll entertain that when Senator Ress asks us to.
Thank you.
Senator Ress, welcome.
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the first stop for the bill, so it is an author's amendment, but maybe a little background anyway would be appropriate ahead of time, unless you want to take the amendment.
Senator Johnson moves the A15 author's amendment.
Thank you so much.
All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
It's carried. We have Senate File 1635 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1635
is a bill that deals with the special education payments that are made to charter schools, and there are not very many of them, but charter schools that are whose mission is to deal primarily with special education students. And in particular, in my district, there is a school called Lionsgate Academy, which teaches students on the autism spectrum. And I have visited the school a number of times and met with their students, and as I'm sure those of you that have had similar experiences to mine in dealing with children and young people who are on the autism spectrum, particularly at the higher end, find them to be among the most fascinating people in our lives. Their views of the world, the way their brains work, makes me smile every time I think of them. And so there's an issue with the way in which the education payments, special education payments, are made that this bill tries to right. And I must say that the terms of how and the formulas for how these payments are made are more complicated than things I see in the tax committee. So I'm not going to try and explain them to you, and I'm hoping that you all are far more familiar with them than I am. And so there's a lot of language here that I would, you know, call on counsel to explain if there are questions from members. But that aside, I would like to present my testifier, who can tell us what the problem is and why this bill is a solution. I will let you know that the department testified in the House committee, the other body, just yesterday about wanting to make sure that this language accomplishes the purpose of the bill. I did not know about that until I got an email from this person at midnight last night. I happened to be up at 1 o'clock, and so I read the email. I would hope that we have more timely communications from the department as we're moving forward. And it's not just this department, but other agencies. And I know that they work hard, they work long hours, but we want to make sure, authors of bills, that we have things as correct as we possibly can when we bring them before a committee, and we're not just doing it on a promissory note. Wasn't too happy about that email, but I do appreciate the spirit that's coming from the department in wanting to assure that the bill that I hope the division will consider accurately reflects the goals that we're trying to pursue here. So, Mr. Chairman, if you will, like to present a representative from Lionsgate Academy of Crystal, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ron Berger. I am the finance director at Lionsgate Academy. And I just want to take a few minutes to tell you a little bit about Lionsgate Academy. We are not the only school that would benefit from this bill. Fraser Academy would as well, as would Metro Deaf. Fraser Academy is located in Northeast Minneapolis. Thank you, Linda. There are some representatives from Fraser here if you have any questions specific to Fraser as we go. And just looking at things from Lionsgate Academy, we inclusively educate students on the autism spectrum. That means that sometimes we have a few general education students whose parents choose to go to school at Lionsgate Academy because they like our program. We have 164 students in fiscal 15. 161 of those, 98%, are students with IEPs. The remaining three students are general education students who require federal 504 accommodations. Those students come from 37 districts and 61 communities throughout the 11-county metro area. Only about 55 to 60% of our students are from Hennepin County. We have students from as far away as Scandia and Prior Lake. To summarize the bill's impact, this bill is limited to schools with 90% or more of their students on IEPs. Those schools have a funding issue related to the excess cost of their general education programs. We have to provide mandated services to students, and we provide it through an education program. Our school provides accommodations to help all of our students access our gen ed program. This bill would accelerate payments of aid related to excess general education, lease, and transportation costs, along with excess special education costs incurred in support of the school's programming for students with special needs. It will the bill will reduce the holdback for these schools to approximately 12%. Lionsgate experienced a 25% holdback on February 28th of 2015. Substantially all of this bill's costs are accounting shifts. They're not additional funding. That's more than 95% of the cost of this bill. The additional funding, which is approximately $30,000 per year, covers the incidental general education cost of educating the few students in each school who do not have IEPs. In our school, that's three of 164. At Fraser Academy, that is six of 78. The accounting shifts will save Lionsgate Academy approximately $35,000 of interest expense during fiscal 16, which more than covers the cost of the additional aid requested. This bill does not need to change MDE's existing processes, and other than the additional funding, does not increase or decrease costs that are currently tuition billed to other districts. The bill also enables MDE to continue to work with the schools to provide timely program funding. Both schools enjoy a very good relationship with special ed funding folks at the department. If you have any questions or would like to provide more information, please let me know. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. And I will ask the department if they wanted to reflect whatever was in that email at midnight and you know, where this is going at this point. So.
Mr. Chair, committee members, again, Adosh Uni with the Department of Education. And first of all, to Senator Rest, I apologize for the tardiness of the email. I was trying to wait for the school finance division to see if they could meet to come up with any more of a rounded out, if there needed to be any solution. They're meeting today to really go through the bill and make sure that it really gets to the intent of what. And as Mr. Berger mentioned, the school finance division has a very good relationship with these charter schools and have always been worked to see how they can make the situation better. And I'm fairly confident that we'll be able to make sure that everything works out as is intended.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to provide some history, when we did the big shift some years ago, we actually did an exception for Lionsgate, and I believe there was one other school at the time, to give them 100% because they couldn't survive with that shift. And we actually have had several occasions where there have been problems with Lionsgate and the department because of the special nature of that school. And so I know that you are new to the department, and so I just want to make sure you know that it is really a remarkable place. And if this committee ever gets the chance to visit it, I would highly recommend it. I've done teaching in it as a, you know, to just experience it. I know Senator Rest has done the same. And it's truly a place where students who have autism are just operating at their highest potential in a very safe, accepting, and challenging environment. So thank you, Senator Rust, for carrying it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like
to address Senate File 1635 as amended. We know there's others. We appreciate the reps from others from Lionsgate and Frazier Academy, and to talk about the need to address the shortcoming in funding right now. That is made a part of the record. It's our impression that the department will work with the author, and it would be our intent to lay this over for possible inclusion. And Senator Rust, would you be comfortable with that spirit of understanding?
Mr. Chairman, not only would I be comfortable with it, I appreciate it very much.
Okay. I'll repeat. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to add to the understanding of the committee at this point? If not, Senator Bonoff moves that Senate File 1635 as amended be considered for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. On Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, is there a fiscal note that currently exists?
Mr. Chair. Wilms. Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, fiscal note has been requested. It is pending, but it is requested for the new language. There is a fiscal note that exists for the language as introduced, but ignore that fiscal note as we await
note. I would just request that the fiscal note be sent to me as well as to members of the committee.
Before midnight.
Okay. Whenever I'm awake.
Okay. All hours, then. Okay. We do get emails, though, at all hours, and I know some of you respond to them, too. So, in any event, Senator Bonoff renews her motion. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you, Senator Rest and Testifier.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Senator Bonoff, Senate File 1042. That'll be followed by Senate File 849. The provision I have, 1935, is a technical bill which will take less than 30 seconds, and we'll get to that at the end. And we ask Senator Bonoff if your testifiers could please join you. We do have a fiscal note for everyone's reference as well. Senator Bonoff, please proceed with Senate File 1042.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have the A2. I would move.
Okay. The A2 amendment is an author's amendment. It's being distributed. And on the A2, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried as amended. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A2, by the way, just deleted duplicative language and clarified that the revenue for ALC is the average amount per pupil. With regard to the overall bill, I'm carrying this bill on behalf of the Alternative Learning Centers. And the Alternative Learning Centers do an absolutely extraordinary job with some of our most toughest to serve students. And so, unfortunately, the regional ALCs who are often educating the ones who are the most difficult to educate get a disproportionately less amount on a per pupil basis because the funding is capped. That in fact the state, you know, per pupil follows the student, but the additional revenue that would flow with referendum, for example, does not go to those ALCs as well as other additional revenue that flows out of the general fund. So without changes in funding, regional ALCs will not be able to continue operating programs for this group who are disproportionately students of color, homeless, highly mobile, have mental health needs, pregnant, single parents, truly the gamut of the population that goes to the ALC. So I would like to just turn this over and let them speak for themselves. And by the way, Ms. Lewandowski, who is joining me at the table, is our superintendent of the year this year. And so we congratulate her, and it's great to have her here.
so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Good morning. My name is Sandy Lewandowski, and I'm the superintendent of Intermediate District 287, and I represent all three intermediate districts in our state and also the nearly 400 students who attend Area Learning Center programs in my district. In a few minutes, you'll be introduced to two of those students, Orlando and Cynthia, and they'll tell their story about attending an ALC in a regional center. ALCs provide a choice for students like Orlando and Cynthia who are not succeeding in their traditional high schools and meet any of the 12 graduation incentives provided in statutes. They include pregnant and parenting teens, students involved in the juvenile justice system, students who have significant truancy issue, and many who come to us with an average literacy at the fourth grade level. They are students who may have been suspended, excluded, or expelled, and they are disproportionately students of color. Many are English language learners or students whose family mobility has prevented them from being even close to attaining the credits they need for graduation. Many have suffered significant childhood trauma or gaps in their education or have identified or unidentified special education needs. In short, these are the students at the heart of the achievement gap. Students such as Orlando and Cynthia often bring to us a work ethic, a sense of grit, and a multitude of life experiences as they walk through our school doors. They want to better their lives and those of their families, and they are also a critical part of the workforce we need right now. But here's the difference. Orlando and Cynthia and their peers differ in one big way. If they come to our regional ALC rather than their regular high school, the resources we get to provide for their education are disproportionately lower, and in my school district, that's approximately 25% less than if they attended their resident district high school. That amounts to about $2,000 per student to do the very challenging things that you've heard about all morning, but with less money to do it. How does this funding difference exist for students who face so many life challenges? Well, the current revenue for intermediate ALC programs and our outstate counterparts are capped by school finance laws, and intermediates don't have access to location equity dollars. As a result of changes at the end of the session last year, all three intermediate districts had to move money from their reserves to fund to the tune of about $300,000 for our district just to balance our budget last year. The result is students who attend my district have significant difference in the amount of revenue that we have to educate them. To be sure, this is a problem for us. As a school leader, I'm here to testify that such fiscal inequity is never justified and quite possibly violates a student's fundamental right to an education. Our Constitution declares that it's the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. Surely, we cannot understand this difference to be a uniform system. In order to fulfill the charge of the legislature, I would respectfully submit that current funding provisions need to change. Who among us as leaders can justify that the most needy students are provided less revenue? And if we can't justify it, I would ask that we change it. As Senator Bonaf said, without changes, at least in my district, we run the very real risk of discontinuing our programs. And now I'd like to ask Orlando to share his story about coming to our regional center.
Thank you, Superintendent. Welcome, Ms. Turquino.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Orlando Rizzaquino. I'm a senior at South Education Center Academy. I transferred from Richfield High School because I fell behind on my credits for graduation due to workload in the classes and lack of attention from teachers. I looked for help from my high school, both from my counselor and by staying after school with the teacher. No matter what I did, it never seemed to work out. I never was able to get that one-on-one time that I desperately needed. So I decided to take matters into my own hands. I looked for another option other than just simply dropping out. After a couple days of searching online, I made the decision to call Intermediate District 287 and set up a visit. That was the easy part. The hard part was convincing my parents to consider letting me move to an alternative high school. They were worried about the image they had in their minds about alternative schools. They thought it was a school for all the bad kids. Once we visited SECA, their opinions on alternative schools completely changed, not just because of the excellent facilities, but by the energy the place had. The teachers were not there to judge, but to find solutions to the problems. They embraced everyone that came, and they put forth all their effort to see each and every one of their students succeed. This was a perfect place for a student like me to succeed, because not only did I not have to compete with hundreds of students for the help of the teachers, but I was presented with other areas in which I could find success, such as their certified nursing assistant program, which helped me get certified in the state and get a better paying job. I have also been a member of the AVID program, which is a college prep program, and our student council. I would not have had these opportunities if I had stayed in my original high school. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations on turning it around. Yes, and welcome. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Cynthia Carranza. I come from a family where school wasn't a priority. My mom worked three jobs to support us financially and was never involved in our schoolwork. My mom didn't know about how the school system worked. Because my mom couldn't help me like I needed, my education never seemed like a priority. But I was going to be the first in my family to graduate from high school. I was attending Richfield High School before I transferred to Intermediate District 287 South Education Center. I got pregnant during my freshman year at Richfield. I missed about a month of school before I was able to return to school. When I came back, I was treated differently. I remember it being very difficult to balance being a mother and getting my homework done on time. There was a lack of positive support at my school for me. I always found myself in the social worker's office or the counselor's office. I felt excluded from the whole school. At one point, I just felt like giving up, but I knew that giving up wouldn't just affect myself, but my son too. My social worker mentioned District 287 to me, and I decided to give it a try, and I don't regret that decision one bit. There are few schools that offer childcare on-site, and District 287 did. This was a tremendous help. The teachers were unbelievably supportive and understanding. I got that one-on-one help that I didn't get at my home school. I felt comfortable asking questions in the small-sized classrooms. I was able to participate in awesome programming through District 287. I got my first responder certificate and my certified nursing assistant license. I was a peer mentor and a part of student council and AVID. I felt involved in school, and I actually enjoyed going to school. It was very family-oriented and influenced me to consider pursuing a career in family therapy or something else in the psychology field. I graduated in 2014, and I am now attending Normandale Community College, trying to finish up my generals, and I will be transferring to the University of Minnesota. I am extremely thankful for all the student-centered support I got from District 287, and I think that with all the unique needs of the students at District 287, they should have the same funding as students from a regular high school. I know that there are a lot of students who are looking for that extra help, and I know that they will find it at District 287. After all, we are all going to school for one reason, and that is to get an education and succeed in life.
What an inspiring story. Congratulations. We wish you the best, each of you.
Mr. Chair, when I was asked to carry this bill and really confronted, I'd always known about the issue, but when I really confronted what it looked like in terms of dollars, I said to them, well, this is okay, but shouldn't we just change the law and say that the dollars follow the students and let all referendum dollars follow these students? And they said, oh my gosh, you'd have districts, you know, clamoring around this state. You know, that would really be a tough hurdle. So I'm not coming here with that drastic bill before you today. I'm rather just saying, you know, is it possible for us to provide some assistance to make sure that these top-notch high-quality alternative programs continue to develop and nurture, you know, the potential of the students like we have before us today, because they are inspiring.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to testify on Senate File 1042? Not Senator Bonoff. Well done, and Superintendent and testifiers, we'll entertain a motion. Senator Bonoff.
I would move that Senate File 1042, as amended, be possibly included in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. On that motion, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you again. Next, Senate File 849, Senator Stumpf, and we ask that your testifiers please join you at the table. And that'll be followed by Senate File 1935, which is a technical bill, which will take less than a minute. In fact, members, I'm going to turn the gavel to Senator Johnson. As Senator Stumpf is preparing, I will bring before you Senate File 1935. Madam Chair.
Senator Wieger, explain the bill.
It's a formula allowance clarification. It's a technical bill, and Mr. Wilms is available if there's need for any questions. Representative Loon has the companion bill, and frankly, this could be a vehicle bill that would be potentially in place. So that's there shouldn't be any mystery about that. If there's questions, I could respond, but it's technical. And if there's no questions, I would move that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. Senate File 1935.
Senate File 1935, all those in favor of the motion as presented by Senator Wieger, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stumpf, we now have before us Senate File 849, A Chance to Grow.
Thank you, Mr. Thanks. Chairman and committee members. I'll try to be very quick. Senate File 849 is a program. It's the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, and it helps train teachers in dealing with you have a handout in your packet dealing with early
yes.
preschool children. And I would just add that this has been around for quite a while. I remember back in the mid or late 1990s, and it has on the back side of one of those handouts, you'll see a number of areas in the state. There's a map that you can see where they have been working with school districts around the state. And then I'll just conclude that before I ask for the testifiers, that if this moves forward, that there would be some language added that would define a little bit clearer the purpose of the funding. And then secondly, that we would end up having a report come back to the legislature with the results of that funding.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. That'd be very important, and perhaps the testifiers might hone in on that specific part. So, okay.
And I'll turn it over to Mr. DeVore.
Welcome, Mr. DeVore.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf and Chairman and members. In interest of brevity, I know you're really working long and we have a lot to cover and it's complex. I'm being restricted to my statement, so I'm going to read my statement to you. Hopefully it'll answer some of the questions you may have, and of course we can handle any questions you have afterwards. My name is Bob DeBoer. I'm founder and co-director of A Chance to Grow. In my years of experience as a teacher, first at Marshall High 30 years ago, and as a counselor, I passed on average or above average students who were functionally illiterate. Then I had a daughter with special needs, and no longer did I have the luxury of, quote, being objective. Now I had to find things to help her, always looking to bring it back to education. That started a lifelong search to learn of the lessons gained from applying the latest brain research into the classroom. In turn, we created a chance to grow a nonprofit organization to apply this research in an economically sustainable manner to help children reach their highest potential in the areas of education and rehabilitation. We've grown since 1983. Our work now includes home-based services, 5 outpatient clinics, Early Childhood Enrichment Center, and our Teacher Training Center, the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, which was originally funded by the legislature in 1998 and has trained and mentored over 3,200 teachers across the state in 128 public schools and Head Start centers. One of the handouts shows that map, as Senator Stump has referred. In the course of our work, we discovered that all students of all backgrounds and abilities learn better when provided activities to develop their physiological and neurological readiness skills. We developed a training curriculum for K-3 teachers called SMART so that they could apply these activities in their own classrooms. SMART stands for Stimulating Maturity Through Accelerated Readiness Training. Your committee has spent a considerable amount of time talking about school readiness and some about learning readiness. With pre-K students, early childhood students, we are focused on learning readiness, which is a precursor to school readiness and is typically achieved in the first 5 years of development. When normal brain and sensory stimulation takes place in those early years, those children can enter school with a brain and body that's ready and capable of learning and benefiting from teacher instruction. Without maturing of these sensory systems, a child may not even be ready to master eye movements for reading across the page smoothly, or have the ability to sit upright and comfortably while seated, writing, or hear the subtle differences between language sounds. These skills must come before the brain and body is able to acquire school readiness skills that include things like letter recognition, counting, following directions, taking turns. We have worked with 22 Head Start programs in Anoka, Mojave, and Washington counties and have seen children make marked improvements in their learning readiness. We did a 5-year longitudinal study where we documented how the Head Start students who did just 20 minutes a day of the SMART activities performed at or above middle-class peers in kindergarten, first, and second grade on nationally normed tests. The SMART pre-K activities significantly changed the lifelong trajectory of these Head Start children. The SMART program is tested and proven to work, and the skills these students learn do not fade in the higher years of their education. Most recently, we expanded our professional development workshops to pre-K teachers through a grant from the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation in small rural Southern Minnesota school districts. The widespread demand for training and mentoring has been significant, but the limited resources in the area of preschool education has severely limited the number of sites where we can provide the classroom training and mentoring to fully install the SMART pre-K curriculum. We are here today to ask for your help in allowing us to expand this training more widely for pre-K teachers and new K-3 teachers, in keeping with the new greater emphasis on early brain development. This work trains our most important assets, and that's our teachers and our schools. So now I'd like to turn it over to Cheryl Smythe, who is our training director, and she'll briefly describe how our SMART training program works on the preschool or early childhood setting.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Smythe.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Cheryl Smythe, the director of the Minnesota Learning Resource Center at A Chance to Grow. We provide the SMART training to pre-K through third grade teachers by conducting a very hands-on 3-day workshop and ongoing mentoring. As you can see from the handouts we've supplied, the SMART training and mentoring has shown through a 5-year study involving 22 Head Start sites to be highly effective with educators and, most importantly, children's increased readiness skills. Our workshops provide teachers with multisensory approaches to improving learning readiness based on neurological research. Bob DeBoer described learning readiness, and I would like to invite you to feel what learning readiness is like for children. Here's an example. If you would take out a pen and write your name on a piece of paper that you have in front of you.
We're doing that.
All right, great. Then I know it's been sort of a long hearing this morning, so I'm going to invite those of you who would like to join me to stand up, and we'll test some of your motor skills.
Sure.
Thank you. Now, in order to test your motor skills, what I'd like you to do is please stand on 1 foot for a count of 10. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Good skills. All right, now if you'll try to stand on 1 foot for on the one set of toes for just 3 seconds. One, two, three. A little more challenging. And last, if you would stand on that one set of toes and now write your name again.
Oh my
gosh. Try to do that while you're standing. Make your best effort. So on the one set of toes while you're standing, hold the paper if you can. And then when you're done, you can have a seat.
It's not so good.
You may notice some different motor output. This example demonstrates really how children who come to school without the learning readiness skill of balance feel when they're learning how to write. Mm-hmm. And in your materials is a handout titled Benefits of Smart Activities that gives several other examples of learning readiness skills and the corresponding classroom application. We train about all of these in our workshops and many more with the teachers that we train. While we continue to provide SMART workshops to school districts without state grant funding, our experience is that many districts are not in a position to spend their limited professional development monies without a partial match, and that districts will typically not fund the costs of the mentoring component afterwards. We all know what it's like to go to a workshop and get energized, and then we get back to our job, and the inertia of our work affects our best intentions. And mentoring guides teachers with on-site visits and helps them to fully implement the program, which fits easily into their existing curriculum. This bill would allow us to provide more early brain stimulation training to teachers, especially in pre-K programs, and ensure that the vital mentoring accompanies it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had one addition. We do also have two educators here to testify, but we have letters of support for those who could not travel. So we have copies for each of you.
Okay. They'll be distributed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Morning.
My name is Kim Cleven, and I am the Early Childhood Coordinator for the Lake Crystal Welcome Memorial School District. We are a rural district that serves 920 pre-K to 12th grade students in the south central part of our state. It is my great privilege to come before you today to share my experience with the SMART program as both a teacher and an administrator. This past August, I had the opportunity, along with my staff, to receive the Minnesota Learning Resource Center SMART training. The SMART strategies and interventions that we learned about help us truly understand the importance of a multi-sensory approach to learning in the early childhood classroom. As educators, we often attend a workshop and receive very worthwhile information, but go back to the classroom without any time or support to incorporate what we have learned. The mentoring we received this year through SMART was invaluable and helped us to easily adapt the process into our daily routine and environment. We began to see immediate benefits and positive effects on the children in our classrooms. Many of our 125 Little Knights preschoolers experience daily chronic stress, and many have learning delays, and these interventions help to calm their little bodies and strengthen those skills. I cannot stress enough how important the mentoring component of this program is to us. It helped us to get SMART started quickly and provides the support and encouragement that helps my teachers implement specific strategies and interventions and incorporate what has worked for others. Without the mentoring and support, programs like this are at risk of fade out, but thanks to the support that we receive this year, our program is thriving and our students are better equipped to learn because of it. This funding would be a huge benefit to programs like our school readiness and ECFE. Because of the incredible impact we have seen in our preschool students, we would like to expand the SMART program into our kindergarten and first grade classrooms. A local kindergarten teacher I know recently attended the SMART workshop, and in her words, it was the best training she had ever been to. But without the resources and support of the follow-up mentoring, she has not been able to implement SMART and is feeling frustrated with having had such a great learning experience and not being able to get this started for her kindergarten students.
I hope this committee will provide the means to extend this transformative program and mentoring to other teachers and schools, especially in early childhood programs and the very important early learning years. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Clement. And Ms. Torgerson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Monica Torgerson, and I am currently employed as a mentor teacher at Anoka Washington County Head Start Program for the children ages 3 to 5. I'm one of the 3,000 educators in Minnesota who have gone through Minnesota Learning Resource Center's SMART Workshop. I was one of the teachers in the pilot program, and I have benefited from the follow-up mentoring. One year I had a little boy who would climb on shelves, chairs, tables, and who could barely make it through a typical preschool day. By the end of his school year, he was able to attend, make friends and keep them, and learn with the other children. These dramatic improvements in his abilities were accomplished by easy day-to-day activities of mentoring that can be done right in the classroom. Most of the children I have taught are low-income children whose families do not fully understand the importance of the first 5 years of their child's life. In many cases, these families are simply unable to give their children the brain stimulation and muscle movement they need to fully develop and be ready to learn in the classroom. Throughout the years, I have implemented SMART in my classroom and told other teachers about their program. I have seen tremendous improvements in students' successes. Children who were once struggling leave ready to learn, functional right alongside their peers, and go on to kindergarten and be successful there also. Without the additional mentoring provided by the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, I know I would not have been as successful. The mentoring also enabled me to teach my new assistant teacher about SMART program and pass on best practices. Additional funding for SMART mentoring with a new staff member and children on individual education plans would be invaluable to student successes, ensuring that they are able to fully experience and incorporate the SMART program and achieve learning readiness. Extra help to look at the children and provide insight on what as a teacher may not be seeing and missing from the children's neurological and physical readiness to learn benefits everyone involved in the classroom, including staff, children, parents, and our program as a whole. I hope this committee will provide the means to extend this training and mentoring to other teachers, especially in early childhood programs like mine. Those first 2 years of mentoring made me more successful and helped so many children become better students who came to school mentally and physically ready to learn. I've seen it work firsthand, and I know that ongoing mentorship is the key to helping more children and families across our state. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, and to each of the testifiers for sharing the success story. And as Senator Stump pointed out, you're going to be developing some further language on the deliverables that would be included in the request for dollars.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And then also, I think it would be appropriate to have a report back to the appropriate legislative committees.
Okay. So, well, that'll be included in the spirit of the motion that we'll consider shortly. Is there anyone in the audience that'd like to testify on Senate File 849? Questions, comments? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very, very interesting, Senator Stump, and doing this. And no question about it, important to do and helping teachers to learn these skills. I just think it's interesting, though, that as a parent, I didn't know I was doing SMART activities and taking my children to the park, and they just thought they were just having fun. And so I think we've heard another one about free play and just letting children have that it's actually their work in what they do. But I think whether it's through the school or through parents just doing these things, I think we should just tell them all how smart they are when they do these things. Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer, it's a very good observation. We look at the reason for the success of the SMART program is it's based on the universality of the development of the brain in all children across the world. So you're right. And so in the schools oftentimes, certainly in the K-3 grades, the SMART time for the class is almost like a structured Toys R Us. It's very a lot of movement, but with a lot of purpose.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Stump, we'll entertain a motion if you'd like to make it at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that Senate File 849 be recommended to be placed on the table for
possible inclusion.
Possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
On that motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you, Senator Stump, and to testifiers. And members, our next meeting is tomorrow, and the agenda is listed on the agenda for today. There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.